24. Gregson Rusk sat in his room above the saloon in 1866 and studied the piece of paper. As rooms went, he'd been in far worse and couldn't remember many better. He still drank in the two-bit saloon across town, but sleeping on a feather mattress felt damned good after 2 years of his lumpy camp bed. Or it had. Now he couldn't wait to get out of the room, out of the damned town. He studied the slip of paper. Letters and words had never been his strength. He wasn't one of those men who could guzzle down whole pages the way some men guzzled booze. But he could force his way through, digging through the alphabet like he dug into the side of a hill. He knew his own name and important words like gold and California and Buchanan. The woman who'd given him the scrap of paper was either a fool or a saint. Maybe his guardian angel. He would have signed the whole claim over to her for this information. At one point, he'd done far more drastic things for far smaller leads. The morning coach would take him to Kansas City and from there to Memphis. He thought of sending a letter ahead, or even a telegraph, but in the end decided it would be better to just see Edmonds one last time in person before shooting him. He set the scrap of paper carefully between the pages of Aesop's Fables, right where The Farmer and His Sons ended. He closed the book, then wrapped it in the sheet of heavy vellum that had protected it out to California and back. The volume went on to the wooden slats under the mattress, right next to the small bundle of papers that was his claim on the gold mine. He tugged the blankets this way and that, until the bed looked undisturbed. His treasures hidden away, he pulled on his coat, dusted off his hat, and snuffed out the lamp with a puff of air that whistled across his jagged tooth. Supper awaited, and tomorrow, on his way to find Louisa. He pulled open the door to his room. Two men stood in the dim hall. Each wore a small brimmed hat, like some kind of mashed-up derby. They had short-cut coats and odd, wide neckties. The taller man had his hand raised to knock. His eyes were closed, as if he'd been listening at the door.
"Hello,"
said both men in unison. Rusk fumbled for words, but they'd never been his strength. The tall man pulled a small book from his pocket and swung it open like a bored preacher opening his Bible for the 10,000th time.
"Are you?"
the man asked.
"Gregson Edgar Rusk."
"I am."
Both men gave a single nod. The tall, square-jawed man held up a leather billfold. He flipped it open to reveal a multi-pointed silver star, maybe a sheriff's badge or a U.S. Marshal's, then flipped it shut just as quick.
"We'd like to ask you a few questions about a pair of fugitives we believe may have been in the area."
What? "Criminals,"
said the other man. He packed a lot into the word. The coarse edge reminded Rusk of someone low-born trying to put on airs. He'd seen a few men strike gold and act this way. He'd done it himself. The thought gave him a brief smile.
"Is something funny?"
asked the shorter man. He had a trim waistcoat on beneath his jacket.
"No, pardon."
"You're looking for, what, some kind of robbers?" "In a manner of speaking,"
said the tall man. He stepped into the room, forcing Rusk back.
"We believe they're trying to acquire stolen property."
The smaller man followed him in and closed the door behind them. Twice during his years in California, men had wandered into Rusk's small camp and made him itch. The first had been a lone Mexican. The second time, 8 months later, were two men who sounded like limeys. They'd all eyed his equipment, asked if he'd been lucky, and eventually gone for their guns when they thought his attention was elsewhere. He'd given them all Christian burials, even if they didn't deserve it. These two men gave him the same itch.
"The two fugitives are a man and a woman," the tall man told him. "They'd most likely be wearing unusual clothes and may have been riding a horseless carriage."
Rusk thought of his guardian angel and her skinny companion. Thieves or not, they'd done right by him.
"Lots of men and women in Independence,"
he said.
"Can't right remember any that stood out like that." He's lying,
said the smaller man.
He's seen them recently.
The tall man stepped forward. Rusk brushed his coat back, exposing his holster, and screamed in pain as the bones in his hand shattered. The smaller man stood next to him, having crossed the room in a blink. He squeezed again. Rusk felt two more snaps that made his whole body shudder.
Stop that, said the tall man. It's unnecessary.
He was reaching for his weapon.
Then disarm him. We're here to talk.
He'll talk now,
the smaller man said. He made an odd noise, something between a cough and a laugh, as if his mouth were covered with a heavy bandana. The night beyond the room's window brightened. There'd been some clouds, and now the moonlight hit every snow-covered roof in town. Rusk's room brightened enough for him to get a better look at his two attackers. The light from outside gleamed across their faces. Each man wore a mask of thinnest glass, almost a glaze. Lips, wide eyebrows, and flushed cheeks had been painted on to the fragile forms. The smaller man's mask had a swooping mustache and a narrow beard as well. Beneath the glass, through the tiny holes in the glass face, Rusk could see the square-jawed man's eyes still sat mostly closed. Entirely closed, in fact. Both men could have been asleep beneath their masks. Then he focused his eyes a little better in the dim light. He turned his attention to the smaller man. The smooth skin beneath the glass mask flexed and wrinkled, but... Gregson Edgar Rusk, who had killed 5 men, 2 Chinamen, and a pair of mountain lions without more than a flinch, sucked in air to scream. The smaller man punched him in the gut. Rusk's breath blasted out, and something in his stomach flared with hot agony. His knees gave out, and he tried to fall, but the man still held his hand. His wrist twisted as he slipped to the floor. Something popped, and the pain almost distracted him from his gut. He glanced over his shoulder at the bed. He needed to survive. Louisa needed him to survive, even if she didn't know it.
He's talked to them,
said the smaller man, staring over Rusk's shoulder at the bed.
She gave him something. It's hidden under the bed.
I know. It isn't important.
He might tell us where he's going.
He, said the tall man, isn't important.
Rusk threw his left arm across his body, grabbing at his holster. He fumbled his side iron out. His finger hadn't even touched the trigger guard before the smaller man lifted the weapon away and tossed it onto the bed. The broken hand shifted into new, painful shapes as it settled against Rusk's body. He stared at the faceless men.
What in hell are you?
He spat through gritted teeth.
You may refer to me as 15,
said the tall man. The empty eyes of his mask stayed aimed at Rusk's face.
It's important we find the man and woman you spoke with before they escape justice. Any help you can give us would be greatly appreciated.
Don't know where they went,
he said.
They left the saloon a good half hour before I did. I swear on my mama's grave.
Did you see anything unusual outside before or after you left? An unusual carriage, perhaps. Some kind of odd vehicle?
Rusk shook his head.
What did you talk with them about?
Another shake of the prospector's head.
Nothing. They didn't want nothing.
We didn't ask what they wanted, said the smaller man. We asked what you talked about.
Rusk thought back over the odd conversation he'd had with his guardian angel, trying to think of anything the two men would want to know.
Nothing, I swear. I offered to tell them where my claim was, and they weren't interested. They just...
Yes?
It weren't anything special. They just wanted to know why I went out to California.
And why did you?
Asked 15.
I met a fella back in New Orleans. He told me about his trip out west, and I thought, I could do that.
His name?
Hawkins, Frank Hawkins.
When was this?
About 3 years ago.
15 settled back on his heels.
And you told this to the fugitives? All of it?
Rusk nodded.
New Orleans, 1850, said the smaller man. We can track them. Railroad logbooks, unexpected trains on the track.
It's an odd period for a train, said 15. Records will be spotty at best. John Henry will either be easy to find or next to impossible.
Cross-reference with Hawkins?
Agreed.
Rusk looked back and forth between them, understanding none of it. His hand swelled. The ring finger and pinky stuck out a little too straight, as if they'd cramped. They tingled, but the sensation didn't seem connected to the rest of the hand. 15 reached up and adjusted the knot of his necktie.
We may return with further questions, Mr. Rusk, he said. It would be best if you remained here. Do not attempt to leave town.
The prospector coughed.
My sister,
he said before the torn thing in his gut flinched and he coughed again. Drops of blood landed on the back of his damaged hand. The faceless man turned the sockets of his mask toward the bed, then back at Rusk.
The information came to you through illegal means, he said, but poses no security risk to the country or its history. I'm willing to overlook it this once, in view of your current and continued cooperation.
The shorter man stepped forward.
What?
We're done here.
The smaller man's left hand opened and shut, clenching into a quick fist three times.
We're not done. He's a collaborator.
A shiver ran across Rusk's shoulder blades and slipped down his backbone. He'd heard those words before, with just that fire beneath them. Justice dealt out by locals who didn't want to wait for the law or didn't like the way it had ruled. The smaller man had a bad case of badge fever, all excited by his own authority.
We're done here, repeated 15.
He directed it at his partner this time.
Thank you for your cooperation, Mr. Rusk.
The faceless man reached up, touched the brim of his hat, and walked out into the hall. The smaller man pointed his blank face at Rusk for a few moments. His hand twitched open and closed, open and closed, open and closed. Then he followed his partner into the hall, pulling the door shut behind him.